Hey, everybody, welcome back. Another week, another Tuesday, another talk. Tuesday talk. So Latifah's going to get upset with me. I always, you know, mix my words and mix my letters and my numbers sometimes. A great pleasure to invite, you know, our speaker today. I heard her talk on another platform a while back, and I was like, you know what? We need to get her onto our platform. We need to hear what she has to say.
Honored.
So I'm gonna let Farina introduce herself. You know, just tell us a little bit about you and tell us what's going on. And guys, if you got questions, drop them in the chat. Either if you're on the Zoom call, drop them in the chat. If you're on Instagram Live, drop in the chat. I've also put the Zoom link in our bio on Instagram if you want to connect there. Farina, please go ahead.
Thank you, Ali. Hi, everybody. Okay, my name is Farina. I just wanted to say a quick welcome. And so I've been in Dubai for the last 2 years, and I just wanted to, and I'm originally from Singapore. So now my life has been in the Middle East, and it's pretty much the same, just that in Singapore we have more trees and here we have more sand. Now, thank you also for having me today. You know, I always feel like, you know how they say, what is really your purpose? Like when you wake up, you question things around you. And there's this saying that they say, when you don't question, you also don't have an awakening. So no questioning, no awakening, great questioning, great awakening. And for me, I think I was questioning so much throughout my 20s. And, you know, when you first started off in your career after you graduate, and I graduated from photojournalism. So I was doing stories on environmental issues, on social issues. And for me, that was something that I really enjoyed. I wanted to storytell. I wanted to see how I can be useful to the world. But, you know, when you're younger, I feel you already have this cookie cutter kind of in your mind. What is success and what success should be? And you're already in your school, right? You're already being programmed to go, if you have A's, then you are really good. Then you should, you're a perfect person. And then if you reach this, once you enter the workforce, you need to start climbing the ladder. You need to start getting money increasingly every year. And you have to have a position and so on. And of course, I was in that mindset. And with that, I think I went through a period of a lot of questioning. I wake up at 9, I come back at work at maybe 7 or 8, and then the whole routine repeats. Until one day I realized that this wasn't really what I am meant to do. Maybe I'm good at it, but I feel empty all the time. And that's where I fell into a deep depression. And for a year or two, I believe it was almost 2 years, I was in this some sort of what I call a black hole. And what it is I really feel like I went through hell and came back because I really lost sight of who I am. So when I woke up, I'm like, I don't know who this person is in front of the mirror. I feel really empty. I feel like I want to be left alone. Until one point, I really felt it was building up. Until one day I really snapped, and that was my first mental breakdown. And that happened on the morning when I was supposed to be on a flight to Nepal. And I paid for everything for my 2 weeks holiday, and I was meeting my partner. We were supposed to meet, and he's already in Nepal, and I couldn't get on the plane because I was too scared to even go out of the house. I didn't want to take a shower. It was so weird. Like, I was such a different person that day. And that was when I went to my mom and said, I think something is wrong with me. Please help me. And I was like having cold sweats. And I was always going through to the restroom. I was really, really off. And that was when I went to the doctor. I get a lot of my blood tests done. I get analyzed. I mean, I get really a good team of doctor. And then they said, you're diagnosed with anxiety disorder. So during that time, my body didn't know what was safe, what was real danger, and what I was thinking as perceived danger. So my body was on perceived danger for even the slightest thing, like cutting my nails. If I'm going to cut my nail, something bad's going to happen. And if I'm going to shower, I'm going to drown. It's so weird. And then, of course, there's the depression part of it that also came along with it. So that's really in a small nutshell of where my history was with anxiety disorder and depression. And right now, I am now a full-time meditation teacher, and I'll get to that in a minute on how meditation helps me with everything that has happened. So Ali, do I look at the chat and answer through the chat?
As you like.
Okay.
Bruno was asking if it, you know, did this just suddenly happen, or was it like a gradual buildup, or?
Definitely a gradual buildup, but you know, I think as humans, we are so programmed and we're just going through our day like zombies. We're like robots, you know. You wake up, you know what you need to do, you take coffee, you take your second coffee, you go to another meeting. It just becomes so routine that we, any little difficult emotion or something that triggers us or something that we are questioning, we just kind of snap out of it. That was my mindset. And I believe a lot of the people today, even with those I interact with right now, they're like that. And it's this awareness that when we are given this questioning in the day that, hey, something is not right or something is making me feel like this. I don't think this job is right for me. But during that time, I was holding on to a job security because it feels safe. It validates who I am. It's my identity. And I didn't want to be, you know, the whole, oh, I'm a photojournalist. Wow, that sounds nice. And this is what I really, success means to me, is to be earning this amount of money, to be able to travel, la, 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 la. And of course, when I was younger, I believe a lot of it stemmed from a lot of ego. So it was very like, that person said to me that I wouldn't make it. I'm going to prove it. But then once I prove it, I'm like, I'm not happier, you know? So it was this very like, you're not really aware of your own thoughts. And I was just snapping out of it. So I am aware that I was becoming sadder and depressive, becoming very moody, becoming very isolated. And I enjoy being isolated. But at the same time, I was just ignoring it because I'm like, you know, this kind of thing should happen when I'm like later. It's too young for me to think about it. But of course, it builds up and it snowballed into something bigger until my whole body just said, this is the time. I cannot take it anymore. So just to give a visualization, it's like I'm a boiling pot and I've been just boiling and simmering for the longest time. And then on that day that I had the mental breakdown, the lid just had to fly up, you know, and I feel like we could have prevented that. When I look at it on hindsight, I feel like I could have prevented that if I could have taken the time to allow my body to rest, sleep better. I was, you know, I think somebody was saying like, you should hustle, you know, sleep is overrated, you know, we should sleep when we die or something like that. You know, this kind of conversations, I feel like, yes, it motivates you in certain things, but I was really taking it. I'm like, it's okay if I only go with 3 hours of sleep because I'm chasing something. But at the same time, I didn't know that it was really wrecking my body, especially my mind, because chemically imbalanced for my brain, my nutrition level were very off. And that was really when it did. So of course, it's definitely a buildup. So if you're in a, if you see and you resonate with this and you feel like, hey, I've also been on a go, 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 go. And even with COVID times when the whole universe was forced to pause and slow down, you kind of like, I just want to rush. I just want to do something. This feels uncomfortable to just be not doing anything. And that's the time when actually we should give ourselves, whether it's a daily check-in, am I happy? Am I okay? Am I healthy? How is people around me? Who are my loved ones? We forget all these little things because we're just chasing the, I don't know, chasing something of a rat race. And that's okay. I'm not saying it's not, but it is something where if we can do the daily check-in before we go to bed, we also check in again. And then the weekly check-in or the monthly check-in, I think this is a reminder. And that's why slowing down is really the, maybe slowing down is the best way to speed up sometimes, you know? Latifa, I see your question. Did you take meds or did your depression? Definitely. I feel, you know, of course, with the work I do in meditation or any healing work, right? Taking medication is something we shouldn't be ashamed of. When I first went to the doctors, then the doctor, of course, I was losing weight, because my heart, my panic attacks was so constant in the day. I believe I had like 7 panic attacks in a day sometime. And I'm so tired that after every panic attack, you're in cold sweat, your tummy hurts, you just sleep after, and then after that you wake up, you have again. It's so tiring that I lost a good 7 to 10 kilos within a week. That's how much and how my heart was beating so much in through those panics. And of course, the doctor gave me some Xanax to help me sleep, and also another medication to help me with they call it the SSRI medication. So as to allow my brain to believe like I'm happy and kind of like lift my mood. And I feel like at one point when I was taking the medication, somebody gave me a comment and said, you shouldn't share this with your employer because you're going to be blacklisted. They're not going to promote you. But I don't know where, I think it was in me that I just said, you know what, they need to know, because if anytime I'm at work and I have a panic attack, I would want them to know that it is not a heart attack and to get the necessary help for me. So I was putting my health and on my own hands, and I said, no, I don't really care about the promotion or whatever that people are going to think of me, but I just want to have this open and conscious communication with my employer, my office manager, so that they know if anything happens to me, they know what I'm actually going through. And of course, there's this, at first there was this shame, like, oh my God, I need to take medication every day. Am I okay? Am I normal? But I think after 2 weeks of taking it, and I think when you start to take it, you have to be so gentle and so and kind of speak to yourself with so much compassion. I think that's something we always forget. We don't have the patience as well to, you know, we wonder like, okay, I'm going to take this Panadol and in 2 hours, I know I'll be fine. And I don't think that's the same with something of mental illness. There needs to be so much patience, you know. Especially my dad, he'll be like, sabar. I know, you know, he will be, you know, in Malay, we say it sabar, which is also patience. And he's like, you know, sabar, everything at its own time, at its own time. You have to be patient. And I think that was for me, was like, I want to get better fast. You know, I have a lot of things to do. I have a lot of deadlines. But he's like, you know what? The world's going to move on without you now. And that's okay. Your time will come. You just need to focus on yourself and everything will fall into place again. And I think those were the words of wisdom that I really needed to hear at that time. And yes, I took the medication. I think it was about 2 weeks after I start to feel better in a bit, like slightly like, okay, I feel like I can go through life again. But of course, I was taking time to journal. I was taking time to actually talk honestly with myself, talk honestly with people around me who are there to support me. And I also take that slow, mindful step every day, whether it is to do meditation or it is to go to long walks. I believe my biggest healing for me was going to the beach every day. There was a religious teacher and he said, you know, the best cure for anything about mental health is mental illness is to go on to open spaces. You want to feel this openness. So I, you know, that first few days of trying to go to the beach, at that time, my house was about 15 minutes away. And so we're going to take the cab there. I didn't want to step inside the taxi. And if you see me back then, it was so weird. Like even when I'm reflecting and I'm sharing this with all of you, I will be like, Singapore is so humid and it's so hot. It's summer all around. But I'm in my sweater because it feels comfortable for me. I need to wear 2 layers of socks with this, only this pair of shoe, because this shoe makes me feel supported. I need to have like a warm water bottle with me at any time. I feel the air condition of the taxi becoming too cold. I will hold this warm water so that it makes me feel safe and okay again. And I'm constantly sweating, like this cold sweat all the time. But then bless my mom, she was like, you get into the taxi right now. I don't care. Nothing's going to happen to you. So there was also that. You know, it's like you need to have the yang, they call it the yin and the yang, two very different caregivers. There will be my brother who's very soft, like, you can do it, you can take your time. And then there's my mom who's like the lion, right? And like, you get in there, I don't care, you can do it, you know? And I think that was such a nice balance and that was something that I needed. And I go inside the taxi, I pray throughout that 15 minutes. It felt like 15 hours in the cab. Once I reached the beach, I need to be away from people. I don't like a lot of people during that time. And I need to breathe and I need to drink my hot water. I need to see the open spaces. And I was doing that for almost like 6 months. The first 6 months was like just battling with myself, battling with my mom, battling with my brother, just to go to the beach. But slowly in each day, I become more confident. I become more like, okay, I can do this. I can do this. And then I start going by myself. And then I go by myself and then I call my mom, can you fetch me? And then she'll fetch me back. And then the next time when I feel better, I go by myself and come back by myself. So I see progress slowly. And I think for me, that was so important. So if any one of you is going through something or you know of somebody going through something, hold that space for them in a way where allow them to go on their own pace. But at the same time, there needs to be some sort of intuitively, you know, when to kind of push the gas and when to push the brakes. So yeah, that's really where the healing journey for me with my depression and anxiety. Coming to anxiety. Yeah, please.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing. And I think, you know, a lot of times we talk about when we ourselves are in such a situation, or we talk about how, you know, someone is dealing with anxiety or depression or what or whatever it is. But you know, one of the things that you mentioned, and I found very, you know, it caught my attention, and I found myself in that position a lot of times, is in the position of the friend or the caretaker or the family, right? And then it's just so difficult to kind of, I want to help this person, I don't know how to help this person. Do I give them space? Do I not give them space? Am I pushing too much? Am I not pushing too much? You know, before you continue with the rest of your talk, can you just kind of talk about the experience perhaps from the friend's perspective or from the loved one's perspective who is dealing with or who is trying to help someone, you know, who is I don't want to use the word crisis, but I'll just say a varying level of crisis.
You know, I feel like my breakdown was really a blessing. And I think for my mom, she went through this before. So she was experienced in this arena because my dad had anxiety and had depression when he was also in his early 30s. And that was really the trigger, was because he's a musician. So he's really an artist at heart. And then, of course, in Singapore, to be a musician, you can't really make money. You can't really bring home the bacon for your four kids. So he was forced to do another job that he really felt like his identity was something that he struggled with. So for my mom, she went through that with my dad before. And she also went through this with her dad before. So this was something she was familiar with. She knew where was the tipping point. She knew when somebody was coming off and when she needed to put the gas. When I asked her, like, after I was pretty much better now. And when I say I'm pretty much better, I feel like you're never really truly healed. You kind of, now you have the tools and the way to kind of cope. But I never really see myself as the girl before my diagnosis. And I also do not want to be in the mindset that, you know, I will never have anxiety anymore. I will never be depressed anymore. Because I think this is a lifelong thing, in a way where you kind of now know that you have the tools to cope. And maybe you don't have the episodes right now, but you never know when life changes, certain impactful or trauma happens, this is going to come up again. And now you know that you can cope with it. But coming to your question on how caregivers, I did ask her, how did you find it difficult? And she said, you know what? The first thing is to listen. When you have somebody, your loved ones, right? Or you see someone, you don't need to input your comments all the time. You also, when I come to you and say, you know what, I'm really feeling really off. I really want to go and see a doctor. Do you think I should? You don't, you know, I know everyone has really good intentions in mind. And sometimes I caught myself doing that. I'll be like, you'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Or like, you know, everybody's going through this. It kind of like, you don't want to validate or acknowledge that someone is going through. So first thing is just listen, and listen with this intent of not I need to just give my say, you know, but listen in a way, I'm trying to understand you. Okay, you're not feeling well. How long has this been and what really you're feeling right now? Listen and then understand again, ask again, listen again, but don't give that person a solution until they ask for it. And I know people who go through depression or anxiety, when they ask for help, it means they really, this is their last option, because we will try to be as strong as we can and we're going to put up the front because we don't want people to see us weak and we don't want to trouble people. This is very anxiety mindset. I feel like, no, I shouldn't trouble people. I will just handle this on my own. But until you ask for help, that's really, you're already on the breaking point. So that person will actually ask for help. But of course, there are instances where people don't ask for help and then they go on the other side, deeper parts. And that's when you need to kind of use your connection and also see, you know, your friend or your loved one best to really see that they're really off. And that's when I think you also need to reach out for help and speak to them in a way, you know what, tell me if I'm doing this wrong, but I feel like I need to actually ask for help right now. Am I allowed to do that for you? And I'm going to be here to support you. Kind of just ask them also and where they are with it. So holding space for people, I think it's really, I might say it's an art as well. It's really like a dance, you know, you have to ask, you have to listen. But I think really deep down is listening to understand that person, not listening to just get an answer or to give your input. Or to even force them to like snap out of it, you know, there are, there's this line that I hear so much. There are so many other people who are living even worse than you, you know, your time will come or things like that. Don't make them feel like your feelings are not valid, even how small it is. We're all human beings. We all have our emotions. So listen. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I think that's very valuable, what you just said. You know, speaking out of personal experience, we've been in lockdown now, I don't know, 4 months, something. And then in the UAE, things have eased up, but everyone, you know, are still, you know, people are being cautious. Like I've gone to the mall maybe twice in the last 20 days or so. And I know my kids are having a tough time not hanging out with their friends. They're having a lot of difficulty. They're on Zoom and they're on like house party and I don't know what, like 20 other apps that I don't even remember the names of. So, and I'm like, you guys are constantly connected, you know, I should be the one missing my friends. You know, I haven't seen, hung out with my friends. But I noticed that with every day passing, you know, the level of agitation would be increasing. The snarky remarks would start popping up a little bit faster.
Yeah.
I don't understand this. They are socializing. Great, it's not in person, but they are connected. And our emails is not the same thing. And, you know, so what I did is I take them for a drive, you know, and I'm like, okay, I'll let you buy a little ice frappuccino. I don't know what, whatever, you know, my daughter likes. And then, you know, kind of, and I took her out separate and I took out my son separately. We're not going together because you're just going to fight. So I took him out separately. And I noticed like the next day she's walking around the house, humming a song, you know, like that type of stuff. And then she wanted to go buy something. She's like, Baba, can I go buy something? And I'm like, you know, we're not going to the mall, so be careful. I'm like, I'll take you in the morning where there's less people. You wear your mask, you wear your gloves, and then you can go buy something. Really, really, really? And I'm like, okay, if you're going, buy everything. We might not come back for another couple of... So, you know, and that evening, she loved it. And of all things, she wanted to go to the bookstore. And she bought like a bazillion books. And she came back and she was so excited. And so it's sometimes, you know, I really had to actively... What I'm getting at is I had to actively look at these small, subtle changes, you know, in my kid's behavior. And I'm like, what's going on? I don't understand what's going on. And then I kind of connected it and I still wasn't 100% sure. And I was like, let me try something. And then when that something worked, I was like, okay, so maybe this is what was going on. But it's so hard to see. And it's not like they're not asking for help. And I think a lot of times they don't even know. The person does not know what they're in. Yeah. You know, a friend of mine I was talking to last week was going through a very difficult time. And then, you know, now the difficult time was over. Whatever happened was over many weeks ago. And I was like, what's going on? Something still seems off about you. You're not talking like you normally would. I don't know. I don't know what's wrong. I don't know about anything anymore. Literally, that was the three lines of text. And I was like,
Wow.
In my mind, I'm like, but I thought you
But
dealt
he
with.
knew, interestingly, he knew something is wrong because
If you're
his
so
body
big,
is telling,
yes.
yeah,
So
exactly.
it's kind of very hard from the perspective of a caregiver to know when to like when even to be there for somebody, and then if you are supposed to be, how you're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
Because like you said yourself, you yourself don't know when you're in such a
Yeah.
situation.
I think it's coming to that, and I think you kind of put it also really nicely. You know how everything is so connected, you know, we are so stimulated all the time that we forget to even hear our own voice. Now, I am an advocate of slowing down, slow living. And one is because I think my anxiety has forced me into becoming this person. It's like you need to slow down. And thankfully, I enjoyed that life. I didn't know, I never even tasted that life after childhood. I think I had like the most carefree life. I love the beach, I love the water. But of course, in Singapore, you're on the go, like it's really fast-paced. I think it's slightly even faster than in Dubai. I feel like in Dubai, I still can breathe and the pace, even when my husband goes to work, I can notice that there's still better balance of the work and life. Now, there is this saying there was one talk I went before with Sadhguru, the Master Sadhguru, and he said, we're always stress management courses. Why are we managing stress? We should be managing life. And I'm like, wow, that is so true. So instead of having this, like you manage stress, it's don't manage it. You manage your life so that the stress is so manageable that you don't really need to manage it, if you get what I mean. And coming back to stimulation, I believe that the first thing and between the relationship of caregiver and the one who is suffering something or going through something, it is really both. It's and why I say it's like a dance is because when you are trying to heal and you're going through this challenging time of your own, you also need to be aware that a lot, like 90% of your healing is from you. You shouldn't put it out on the responsibility of your caregiver or your doctors to go like, I come to you, I pay you this amount, you solve me. And I don't think it works that way with mental health or even any health matter. I think you need to do the inner work yourself. And that's really where the slowing down comes in, because it's only when you slow down, and not to put a plug here of the word pause, but that's why I resonate so much with the word pause, is because we want to press that pause button to allow ourselves to slow down, to connect back with ourselves. And this is something I do on a daily, where even for 5 minutes, I check in with myself again. What is really my intention and what's really my energy that I want to bring out to myself and to people I interact with, whether it's to my security guy, to my colleagues, to a perfect stranger, to the barista. This is the energy I want to be in. I cannot be all, oh, I'm really anxious, I'm really angry, and I hold all this in because I don't work on it. And then I meet somebody, and that person triggers me or piss me off, and I attack that person. And then I blame, you know, that person attacked me first. But actually, it was me. I came from this space, you know, of not being in the right space myself. And that's really why I love a monthly pause where I disconnect from everyone, even my husband. I love this no interruption to my thoughts. So what I do is I actually switch off my mobile. And if you're thinking of doing this, take gradual steps. Start with 1 hour of switching off your mobile. But for me, I love
One
like
hour?
one hour. Just switch off your mobile
I know I
first.
can Latifah's camera's off, but I can feel her shaking her head. 1 hour?
Well, once you start with it, you might get addicted to it. So I definitely did because I really enjoy the no holding of the phone, and just switch it off. I spend one day, and I love this because my husband, he's Indonesian. So every year we do this Nyepi in Bali. And Nyepi, it comes from the word sepi, and sepi is in literal translation is lonely. To be alone. And even like the airports in Bali closes that one whole day, because they are really respecting the environment. They want everything to be shut down. There's no lights. You can't do anything. You can't listen to music. You can't be online. You can't call Zomato or anything to book food. It's a really time to introspect, respect back nature, give the earth time to heal again. And you can look it up. It's NYEPI. And this is such a nice tradition that we love doing together, where we really take a pause and quietness, where we really connect back with ourselves. Of course, in Dubai now, I like my time where I switch everything off, I disconnect to connect back with myself. And I think that's when I really hear my own thoughts, even the bad ones, you know, even things like maybe jealousy, maybe shame, or maybe things that I'm not proud of myself. You know, I'm not a saint here, but sometimes when we're really quiet, that's really when you start to have your own answers, you start to understand more. But because we're so in a rush that we cannot have this time to introspect, to reflect. And that's why I think this overstimulation is causing us to lose our ability to listen, to communicate slowly and honestly. Because if you look on your Instagram, we're just scrolling, right? Whatever that we like, we're going to like really just, it's so intuitive, like so automatically. What we like, we give a love and we give the like. And what we don't like, we just switch. And then we don't take time to actually see what goes beyond that story. And I think this is the patience. And that's why today, a lot of people's patience are just running thin, because time, you know, everything needs to be instant gratification. When I do something, I need it fast. And then when it's not, you just kind of sap it. And I think this is where the overstimulation is causing us to lose our own self-awareness and the connection, the deep connection with people. Now it's just very superficial interaction, even conversations with ourselves. You know, I don't want to go deeper. And I think bringing back to your friend, if he or she take time to just be quiet and start to notice his own thoughts coming up. Because right now, I think his body already knows all the traumatic experiences. His body is on full stress, full alert. His body is telling him so many signals right now. But if he can take time to really be quiet, to go back into the zone, listening to some music that makes him relaxed, giving himself time to really relax, whether it's meditation, whether it's going on doing some things like golfing, I don't know, just to allow yourself to be in this space, a lot of things are going to come up. And then that, I think, is a time for you to process both the good and all the bad. I think when you go on a healing journey, a lot of people only want to see the light, right? I only want to see the light. I want to see the end of the tunnel. But I think when you go through a healing journey, I mean, from my experience, I think I really dug all my skeletons and I really see all my darkness, I think, you know, and the things that I did that I'm not proud of, I took time to forgive myself, make peace with it. People that I need to kind of apologize to, or they have to apologize to me, I make peace with it. And I think that's also some sort of your own healing, you know, in a lot of mental illnesses or mental health well-being, where you are going through something that you might intentionally or unintentionally ignore. And for you to dig deeper, you need to go slower, go with it with a lot of compassion. And that, I think, is also the first step to a lot of healing. And then you kind of see and get to know your new self again and be okay with it, you know. Adding to one point, Ali, there's a friend, and I'm just sharing this because she was saying, I went through a traumatic experience, and I think it was something to do with her pregnancy, and it caused her to be so different right now. And she said, you know what, I really miss being that old person that I am. And somewhat she said that I actually took time to grieve that old person. Although I'm still here, but I never really could identify with that person anymore. And this is really interesting if you go deeper into how people really identify themselves, how we look in the mirror, you know. And for me, I make peace with the girl that I was last time. As a journalist, I was the most fearless girl. I can go out at 2 a.m. I trust my life with my tuk-tuk driver in Cambodia, just so that at 4 a.m. I can really take that nice sunrise shot. And I was with my boots. I was in this landfill of garbage. That was my most, like, a project that I was really proud of. And I really enjoyed 2 weeks of living with people who live in a dumpster in Cambodia. But I, when I look back, I'm like, wow, I live in a place where I don't know these 100 people who live with me. There are syringes and medical devices that are like open around me. I didn't care about my safety. I was the most fearless person. Like, if you ask me to do that now after my diagnosis with my anxiety and depression, not in a million years. I don't think I will ever be that fearless girl anymore. But I'm okay with that. Maybe I can still do that work, but I need to have someone with me, you know? But sometimes you don't need to be that person. We're constantly evolving, I think. And kind of letting go of that attachment of who I'm supposed to be is taking a lot of pressure with myself. So I let go of that attachment and I kind of like, okay, I'm meeting my new self. And I think that's something people need to be okay with. We are so fixated with what we need to look like, what we need to feel like, that we forget to just enjoy the current day and what we're blooming into.
You know, I agree with you. And I feel a lot of times there's fear of letting go. Because, you know, the person you feel that you are, even though you don't feel like this person, but that's the known. And then the fear is letting go and stepping forward into this unknown.
Yeah.
How do you kind of push yourself past that fear? And I think we had a comment in our Instagram about the same thing. How do you push past that fear?
Let me just read it. How do you pass? You know, for me, it is my breathing. It is as simple as coming back to the breath. And it's going to be a build-up kind of work. It's not going to happen overnight. And the first step, of course, is the letting go of control. You know, when I teach my meditation classes here in Dubai, I see people coming in, right? And they sit down and they're like, is my posture right? I need the posture to be perfect. Is this correct? You know, and I'm like, you know, just melt into your body, come back into your real, just feeling your body again. Like, what does my body need right now? Instead of this expectation that I need my spine to be straighter than the person beside me. And we want this session to be the most perfect so that we get the most rest. And in ironically, the more we think about resting, we're not really resting and allowing ourselves to be in the moment. And then that just becomes a cycle of its own. And so letting go is because holding on and having that control gives us this power. We feel powerful, right? Because we have control. But to let go is really a very soft act, I feel. It's a soft, courageous act. People would feel like it's weak, but I see it as you need to be able to trust. It's this trust and this grace and this softness within yourself to let go for that time being and see what happens, to be brave enough to see what happens. So when people come into that meditation, then they're like, okay, now I just notice my body and see, oh yeah, my body actually hurts like this. I shouldn't sit like this and I should let go of that control. And then I start to melt into myself and enjoy the experience more. And of course, I think to push into becoming braver, I think it's really practice, beat by beat. And I think it's also a practice, it's like your muscle memory, right? And also your brain, kind of like for myself. How did I get through that fear of going into the cab and going out by myself again? Not in a million years. If I see myself now in Dubai, I took the flight by myself. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't know I can even reach to this time from where I was at. But it will happen. I mean, I trust, I may not have the future in my head, but I trust that it will happen for everyone who's going through this, that it's going to take one day at a time and it has to come from you the most. It has to really come from you. I don't know what you need to pull deep inside. Like for me, I really needed to pull the bravery inside my body during those downtime, I really need to self-talk myself. I need to journal. I need to really look in my mirror and start pasting post-its of words of confidence. Like, I am brave. I post it all around my house. I think my whole house was like 3M sponsored post-it, you know. but it helped me, you know, and I was visualizing. And that's something with visualizing, I believe. You know, how all these pro athletes, like basketballers, they've used so much of visualization technique. They sit in silence, they visualize every move, every throw, so that when they're on the court, their body just flow with it, right? Because our body cannot really differentiate what real time and what's we're just visualizing and imagining. So if you're going, if you want to see yourself pushing through that fear, I was visualizing a lot of myself being okay to reach that beautiful beach and going inside the taxi. I was visualizing it all the time. And I think that really builds up my confidence as well, because I see it already happening. So it's not really impossible anymore. So if answering to the question, definitely, that's really building that muscle, your brain muscle, your body muscle, to be brave enough to move and rise above it. Of course, when the question from Varuna, which is how meditation helped me calm down, back to breathing. When, let me ask everyone here, the last time you're angry or you're fearful, notice your breath. How's your breathing like? You might be, you know, chest, right? And shoulders like this. But then when you're soft and you're in that flow and you just take a breath from your belly and deep breathing, really changes, right? And my voice starts to change also. So this happens, and this really is the smallest little thing, but we're too fast. We're moving too fast to even notice or to become aware. So yes, breathing definitely helps me for sure. And of course, you know, when you have trouble sleeping because you're going through so much, you're thinking too much, allow yourself to go deep into the breathing. Slow down the exhale. And then that's really when you just tell yourself, rest, sleep will come, rest, sleep will come. And then go into that deep sleep. I think these are all the self-care tools that I really wish everyone really have it. Because I really, especially during COVID times, and clients, whether they're in Dubai or where I connect through Zoom for my classes, or when I meet them also, I'm teaching in a few places here. You know, there are times when people are just like crying throughout the session. And it's really a scary time. And then there are people who are like, they're fine, they come for my session. And then the next week they're like, you know, I really feel like I just want to jump down or something. You know, these are really scary times, especially for me. I mean, when I hold space for people, and I always ask them, do not go into meditation thinking it's going to save you. It's going to be one tool with many, many tools that you can do for yourself. But get yourself professionally checked as well. Get your blood test done. Get a psychiatrist to evaluate you. You know, the professional, mental professionals to really evaluate you. And if you need to get stabilized, that's the most important thing I think here. Stabilize yourself, even if it with the meds. That is so important. And there's no shame in that. But when you allow ourselves to stabilize with those medication, we have better grounding, I feel. To then navigate, what do I need? To kind of open and allow myself to heal here. So stabilize is really important. And I do actually turn away certain clients who come sweating, you know, and then when I shake their hands, it's literally dripping with sweat. And I say, no, meditation for you to close your eyes and to go inside, you're not ready for that. You need to do more like walking meditation, active meditation, like dance. So not everything is also about stillness. So that's something I think people who come, you know, if everyone's like, oh, meditation is this magic pill. It really depends.
Farina, are you still there? Your video, I think, froze.
Oh, did you catch what I said last time?
No. Audio seems to be working.
Okay,
great. Switch your camera on, off and on again.
Okay, 1 minute.
It's still showing frozen on mine. Latifa, is it still frozen on yours?
Yeah.
You can still hear me. Yeah? It is not responding. I'm sorry about that.
No worries. Wait, well, let me try from my side to switch your camera off.
Okay.
Do you want to try and reconnect? It's not letting me do anything.
Okay, let me do that.
Sure. Just a few minutes, a moment or two, guys. We're just going to try and reconnect. We had lost video feed. Okay, I can see you, but you're mute.
Okay. I'm back, everybody. Sorry about that.
Okay, great. We just have a handful of minutes left. Can you talk to me more about House of Paws? Tell me what you're doing with that. How can people get involved? One of the core reasons why Latifa and myself, we set up this entire platform was to connect people to resources that they needed. Please tell us more.
Sure. House of Paws was actually born in Singapore about 5 years ago. I was holding spaces on allowing people to meditate, but also respecting where meditation come from with the lineage and all that. We respect that. But at the same time, with House of Paws, it's a circular meditation where we look at more mindfulness meditation here. So we don't do any chanting. We don't do all the spiritual aspect of it. But we go into breath work, we go into different breathing techniques, visualizations, and also different classes to help you with different things. So I have three different classes. One is called Root, and Root is actually a body scan mindfulness meditation. This is allowing our whole body to really give that deep rest. This is something that I do currently teach most. This is the most popular class. The second class, it's called Release. And Release is where you come and try to navigate the more difficult emotions. So this is more intimate class because a lot of people who come, they start to notice certain things. They want to heal certain parts and certain areas of themselves in their lives. And the last class is called Rise. And Rise is really more visualization technique, as I mentioned before. So currently I'm teaching online, both on Zoom. These are also for my global audience back in Singapore, Indonesia, and also there are some in US and Canada, and have better intimate session with each and everyone who comes for the session. So that's really House of Paws in Dubai right now. For anyone who would like to come, I invite everyone, please try a class with me. I also do a lot of one-on-one sessions, actually. That's really more of my classes here in Dubai. I do a lot of private sessions, a lot of private couple sessions as well. So yes, that's really what House of Paws is. I believe Ali and Latifa will send the link later on. So please feel free to connect with me anytime.
We will be sharing after this, and we'll be tagging you, of course, so you can repost.
Sure, thank you.
Yeah, just wanted, if you can just like put the your tips or the insights and bullet points, also share them on the story and tag you as well so people can follow.
Sure. And I think what Ali and Latifa, what you guys are doing is so important, you know, mental health, breaking down the stigma. It's really an amazing thing. And I think the more the space feels less intimidating, the more people really are brave enough to share and speak about it. So I really commend what both of you are doing here with the mental health space.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
There's one more question here. Should I answer it? Or?
Yes, please go ahead. Yes.
Let me see. That's nice. The group is one of the best things that happened in Dubai for me. That's nice, guys. The question is, when do you think we're actually ready for it? regarding the thing you say about people are so, and am I right to say that this is on meditation or seeking help? Which one is this?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. This was, I just typed down the question we got from Instagram.
Okay.
I think
right I'll just answer for both. How okay. about that? So I think first is when we're actually ready for it. I think, like I mentioned, how we need to go back and come back into the quiet of our own hearts and our own mind to tell ourselves and to be honest with ourselves and go, I think I need help right now, and then go seek help. Sometimes your body is already telling you something is not right, something is this, and what's really holding you back to get that help. And I think that is an indication for you to go and get help. In terms of if we're bringing this into the context of meditation, when we're actually ready, I think it's also about whether you're stabilized or not. If you want to be in that full quiet, you start, you know, when we're meditating, we start to noticing each thought as it comes up, and then we notice the thought that goes. Sometimes there's certain traumas that suddenly come up, and then you're like, oh no, I'm not ready for this. But then you kind of can come back in using your breathing to stabilize you again, and then you can go and use that practice. But of course, we need to do it guided. You need to have a professional to guide you through. Sometimes, yes, there's so many free apps out there. There's so many things. And then when you're listening to music or complete silence, it can bring you into a deeper, darker space. But when it's guided, when you can kind of step out of it and allow that person to hold that space for you, it's also a very important step to allow yourself to go into that practice slowly at your own pace, you know, and not go so dark and deep into your own inner thoughts, and then it becomes a vicious cycle. So that's something where I think you need to assess whether you're ready or not. In meditation, get yourself stabilized first. Don't just go into, you know, I need to meet this spiritual healer so that he or she can heal me in that one session and clean my aura and so on. Don't go into believing that the healing is by that person. And like I said, I'm always a meditation guide. I'm never a meditation guru. I'm never a healer. I never call myself that. I'm really just a bridge between you and yourself. And look out for that as well when you start to go on your healing journey. Do you really give your power away to someone else? And that's something I hope that answers you. Thank you.
That's fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ali.
We're out of time. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you as our guest, and hopefully
Thank
we can
you
have
so
you
much.
Back again very soon. I'll definitely be sharing, you know, your socials and contact and whatnot for House of Pause.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you very
Ali.
Much for listening in, for being brave, for participating. Be well. Stay safe.
Thank you, everybody.
Tomorrow we have our wellness circle, and next week again, Talk Tuesdays, guys. Take care.
Beautiful.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.